Never raise in stars. We live in God LA, where every day we try to fatten our pockets.
Just kind of felt appropriate. Start off with a little bit of Dying LA from Tupac. So, for those who didn't really know what that song was, but kind of felt it a little appropriate on a somber podcast, shall we say, for number 50.
Yeah, we were preparing a couple of different things, looking at what we wanted to do for our 50th podcast, but I guess, unfortunately, for a very lot of wrong reasons, but Kobe Bryant has passed away, and we were talking NBA, but this has obviously taken precedence on our 50th podcast. But welcome to the Final Play podcast. It's going to be a lot of Kobe talk. Zion's debut, we'll talk about that, and we'll sprinkle Damian Lillard's massive 61 points. I keep saying unfortunately because it is unfortunate. Kobe Bryant was only 41 years old when he passed away in a helicopter crash with 9 people on board, including his 13-year-old daughter Gianna. They've named the other victims. So, as Miles has said before off the podcast, it'd be a great service obviously to name these people because, you know, they were victims, unfortunately, as well. John Attabelli, he is a champion baseball coach. And while we keep going with these names, we don't know their background, we don't know the affiliation, but we will name them. His wife and daughter were in that helicopter as well, his wife Carrie and daughter Alyssa. Other victims were Christina Mauser, Sarah Chester, Peyton Chester, and the helicopter pilot Ara Zabayan.
Yeah, it was jarring. Both you and I were in Mackay, and we'd just been bounced from our tournament that we were playing in down in Mackay over the Australia Day weekend. There was a few beverages consumed the night before.
Talk about that too, but that's
that's right. Yeah, obviously, anyway. That's sort of gone out the window as well. But sort of waking up that morning on the Monday morning, Sunday evening, I guess, sort of Sunday afternoon in the States, and these reports coming out, and it just I just remember looking at them, so that's if ESPN and Fox Sports and that are coming out with this, then this is legit, right? Like this isn't what? just fake news. Like it was stunning. Like I just so shocked, and there's what else can you say about it? And it just, you know, just all the breaking news that kept coming out about it, and you're just like, this can't be happening. Like this is unbelievable.
I thought it was fake. I mean, I got an email. Like, you're right. It came over Fox Sports and ESPN. But I thought, you look at it. I mean, when I woke up and I went, and I do as we usually do, check the phone. And, I was scrolling little things. And then it come up on an email, like, breaking, Kobe Bryant dies in a helicopter. And I thought, you know, okay, like, is this real? And then started scrolling more and more. And it's still unbelievable to me, because I think for a couple of reasons for me. One, I think it's because of his age. Like, he is young for a person to pass. 41. And it's just, I think it's unbelievable because he has just retired. We're not, you know, it's been a few years, but he's relatively new into retirement. It's a dumbfounding. I think because he's such a public figure, it's dumbfounding. Like, it's not the age thing, but it's also just such a public figure that it's not
He resonates with Los Angeles. Obviously Los Angeles is known for other reasons, you know, with the Hollywood scene, the music scene, the sports scene that's there. It's his town, you know. We were saying earlier, yep. It's his town. That's just what it is. As coming from a sporting community, but he he transcends just sport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's won an Academy Award.
Yeah, he's transcended sport because. I just listened to it just before this. I listened to Ice Cube was on ESPN, and him being an LA person himself.
Oh, he is synonymous with LA.
With all the stuff that happens, we still obviously, as people that don't live in LA, we saw the glitz and glamour like the Hollywood and certain other things. And he said, but in the real LA world, there's a lot of bad stuff that happens, whether it be in the Hollywood or whether it be on the streets and everything. He said, but the constant that kept everybody together was sport. It wasn't just the Lakers. It was
right.
The Lakers.
Everybody can guess, right? Everybody can gather.
He said the Clippers, even though he's not a Clippers fan, he's the Dodgers. Kept that, kept LA together with all the bad stuff that happens in there. And he said the one constant, yes, his music as well, but the one constant was Kobe Bryant. He brought that town together. When they think the two things that everyone thinks of LA. So what I've been told and what I think is when I think it's LA is Kobe Bryant and that Hollywood sign. That's the first two things that comes to mind straight away for LA.
That's right.
For me.
For me, I think Kobe Bryant, I think Tupac.
Tupac there, yeah.
That's going back a little bit. Obviously Hollywood and things like that. But when you think individuals, people, that's the two things that come to mind. For me is when you think about it, both of them died in unbelievably tragic situations.
Correct.
Too.
It's probably the same, I guess. Yeah, in a way, that's the same sort of thing. It was a sudden impact thing. Back in that day, I shouldn't say synonymous, but gang violence was rampant. Back in the Tupac days, I'm talking about, but
just to say, it still is now.
I'll agree. It definitely had the same effect.
I think the media likes to sweep that sort of stuff under the rug at the moment.
Of course. And this is the other thing with Kobe, and I'm not disputing Tupac or anybody really, but every time someone thought of Kobe, I don't think I ever read or heard or anything remotely bad or like he was cheating his wife or anything really, because it was
he had that he had that rape case against him. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's sort of that's a little blip on the radar. The civil suit was settled out of court. But that was a long time ago now, and I think everybody sort of remembers, it's a lot of recency bias now, and people will just remember the good Kobe, the championships, in 2009 and 2010, the MVP in 2008.
Well,
the finals that year against that stacked Boston team, but
his stats have been unbelievable. He's the youngest player in NBA history at the time of his debut in 1996. He was drafted 13 overall by the Charlotte Hornets, and then was traded on draft night to the LA Lakers, which is, I always think that's still phenomenal every time I think about that.
No, when you think about it, and when you
for Vlade Divac,
obviously I was a Charlotte Hornets fan back in the day, so to see that and go and to have the limited amount of information back then, and just watching the jump sort of earlier today, they had Jerry West on, and he goes into the dealings of that, and one of the reasons why they tried 12 teams before Charlotte actually accepted the deal. They tried to move up because I think they had the 27th pick or 26th pick that year, and they just kept trying every team before that to try and move up in the draft, and finally Charlotte was the one that accepted the offer, and that was obviously with Vlade Divac, and he was still a very good center back then.
Correct.
And that was the deal. That, and it was also part of it as well that they had before this had contacted Shaquille O'Neal, and they had to be creative with salary cap and things like that. With Vlade Divac on the books, they couldn't go out and sign that. I think Shaq got 100. I think it was 120 million. And back then, that's gigantic. Like even now, 120 million still a decent contract. Back then, that's a gigantic contract.
That's your 200 million contracts that they have now. Yeah, it was a massive contract. Exactly.
And they had to get a verbal word from Shaq to say that, yes, he is going to sign here if they made this deal to get Kobe Bryant and to ship out Vlade Divac, because they just didn't have the salary cap space to be able to do that. And Shaq was on the phone with Dr. Jerry Buss. And he had to give him his verbal word over the phone to say, yes, if this deal goes down, then Shaquille O'Neal will be coming to the LA Lakers.
Wow.
I thought that was very interesting to hear that about all the stuff that was sort of going on behind the scenes, and not just because the 12 teams before supposedly they're just like, why is LA trying to offload Vlade Divac? Is there something wrong with him? Like that's what all the teams were saying. It's just like, nah, we don't want him. And that was the reason. They're just like, there's obviously something wrong with him. If LA are calling all of these teams to try and offload him, they must know something that we don't. And then Charlotte was finally the one that took the deal. But you know, he was still obviously drafted by the Charlotte Hornets. And then, you know, they did the deal for him on draft night.
So he spent, and this is still rare into me in NBA, he spent his entire NBA career with the LA Lakers, 20 seasons, in fact. He ended up finishing the fourth leading highest scorer in NBA history with 33,643 points, was third up until only a couple of days ago. LeBron James passed him for the third highest. LeBron James moved up to the third highest point scorer of all time now. He was an 18-time All-Star, 11-time All-NBA first team. Not recognized much, but a 9-time NBA All-Defensive first team. Not talked about much. Five-time NBA champion, 2-time MVP in the finals, and 2-time Olympic gold medalist. But,
only a one-time league MVP. 2-time scoring champion as well.
Just with the All-Defensive, it's something, you know, everyone talks about, and we'll talk about our favorite moments in a second, but everyone talks about offensively, he's untouchable, so to speak. But they never really talked about how great his defense was.
No, that's right.
It's something that, you know, I mean, with Paul Gasol, Shaq and all that, you know, that's how they won these, in a way, not won the finals, but, you know, he played off them very well, but...
No, that's right. Everybody always has help in championship teams. Everybody always has help in championship teams. You know, Mike had Scotty. You know, those runs that the Spurs had. Yeah, you know, Tim Duncan. Yeah, you know, the first ones that was David Robinson was there. You know, the third, fourth, and fifth was Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. Like everybody's always got the supporting cast, even those Pistons that, you know, in 2004 that beat and basically broke up the Lakers. Those Pistons teams was Ben Wallace, Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, Chauncey Billups. You know, those guys. Everybody always had help.
Then obviously from that, he retired in. I better get this right. I think he retired. 2016, correct. The LA Lakers retired not only his, his starting number 8, but also his number 24. He was one of the first players, and he still is only the first player ever to get
the only, two the jerseys. Only player. Yeah, that's right. The only player to have two numbers retired.
And
he was also the youngest player to ever make 30,000 points as well.
Well, you know, again, like we talked about, like, you know, I said the defensive, like his career statistics finished on 25 points per game, 5.2 rebounds per game, and 4.7 assists per game. It's a pretty healthy stat, really, when you really look at it.
Yeah.
Because we'll talk about it, I guess, sort of now. What were your, for Kobe, like when you think of Kobe, what were your sort of standout moments? And we're probably talking about NBA, obviously. I mean, obviously, unless there's something else you could sort of think of.
Nah, not really. It's, you know, obviously, him winning the Academy Award's pretty crazy. For me, you always think of when you look at, you know, the Shaq and Kobe years. You know, probably towards the end, you could see the tension. But, you know, through those three championships that they won, 2000, 2001, 2002, that they just look, as good as any sort of, you know, guard forward slash center duo could be in NBA history. You know, if they could sort of, they were two headstrong sort of dudes. So, you know, there was probably never a chance that they could both put their egos in their pocket and, you know, win another three. And like I said before, you know, that championship team of the Pistons, that basically was the last straw. Like, how the hell did that happen? How did that Pistons team knock off this, you know, this unstoppable juggernaut of Shaq and Kobe and that sort of supporting cast? They had those massive rivalry with the Sacramento Kings.
That's
probably one of the big things that I sort of take out of that era as well. But to me, like, the two sort of things that I always remember, obviously they're on the court, was the where Matt Barnes is doing the inbound pass. He was playing for the Orlando Magic, pretty sure, and he just throws the ball here, and Kobe doesn't even flinch. It's just like, whatever.
Yeah,
and that
like
was
he
crazy.
Did not move. He just didn't
move. Just nothing. Like
no
he was
part
just
of his body moved.
Locked
it was
in.
Unbelievable.
Just locked in.
And that's his game in a nutshell. I can't think of one player
that's locked in.
That has. I mean, there's probably players. Don't get me wrong. There probably are certain players like this, but I can't think of one player that all he wanted to do was win. He couldn't. He didn't do anything bad to win, or you know, there's no like he cheated to win or anything, but his whole mindset is I need to win, and that's how he played. Like that, he was locked in. He was completely locked into winning.
That is so locked in. Like it just, obviously the 81 points against Toronto is just completely insane.
Second only behind.
That's right. That you can just torture a team for 81 points. Yeah. But I sort of go back as well to that 2013 season, where it came out that he had ruptured his Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
It was against the Golden State Warriors. There was a very young, fresh-faced Klay Thompson there at the free throw line. It takes him about 25 seconds to walk from the bench over to the free throw line. They were down 2 points. It was like 109, 107. It takes him a long time to get to the free throw line. He's invisible discomfort and proceeds to hit both free throws. I think there's about three minutes left in the game. You know, hits both free throws. Like who ruptured Achilles and can still just nonchalantly just both free throws go down. Obviously, Lakers have to foul because they don't have possession of the ball to get him out of the game, and then he's basically gone for the next 12 months. He wasn't really himself probably for the next 2 years after that. Like that's a pretty tough injury to come back for anyone. And you know, for him to come back, you know, if he come back to almost the Kobe that he kind of was, and obviously the 60 points in his final game against the Jazz in 2016 is just, that's phenomenal. Like nobody had ever had a 50-point game in their last, and he gets 60.
Yeah, so that was my one more thing, but that stood out to me because, I mean, it was like a circus. That whole game was like a circus. Like the
building, like watching that game this afternoon. That build, especially when he scored the last 17 points before, I think it was a Jordan Clarkson dunk that sort of pretty much ices the game. But he scores 17, and that place was rocking. Like you didn't even hear that sort of electricity during their championships.
He scored 23 points in that final quarter. It was absolutely ridiculous. But that it was
just jumping.
It was like a circus. I mean, remember, buddy, who were they? Red Hot Chili Peppers. Flea played the national anthem.
Oh my God, that was the most horrendous rendition of.
I know, but it's just
the American national anthem I've ever heard in my life. That was disgraceful.
I meant the whole.
Yeah, but that's there. That's another thing I remember from that night. Didn't Fergie?
Try and sing.
That was
the All Star game. That was probably the worst that I've ever heard. Oh, but
that rendition of the by Flea, that was disgraceful.
It was the highest grossing final game ever in an NBA game, because the tickets on courtside were going for $27,500 compared to the typical $1,000 to $2,000.
That's chump change for people in LA. For the people who could be affording
for a final game against the Utah Jazz that weren't playing that well. Well, no, they weren't. I mean, I think they made the finals, but they made the playoffs.
But the LA Lakers were a 16 win team.
It was such a Hollywood finish, which is like cliche, I know, but it was such a Hollywood finish for him to get 60 points in that game. My other one was it wasn't built around like the series. Like, it was 2008 NBA Finals when they came up against a super stacked, and still is super, you know, thinking about that team, the Boston Celtics, when they had Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and I know I'm missing someone else.
Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo.
You know, Rajon Rondo was in that team.
Kendrick Perkins.
Right.
Like, that's a pretty hell of a starting lineup.
But they they didn't really have anybody else in that team. Like, you know, Lamar Odom was still coming through in that game. They only had Jordan Farmer, so they didn't have, you know, that wasn't the greatest team they had. But it was basically Gasol and Bryant, and just that fourth game, the third game, which they won, but he changed the narrative in that game, because they were down 2-0. They were down 2-0, and obviously they had to win that, and they had to win that game, because the first two games were in Boston. And they had to win that game.
If they lose game three, then, you know, obviously they lost the series anyway. But, you know, they lose game three, and that's a massive hole to try and dig yourself out of.
They he finished on a game high 30 and a series plus a NBA season high of 36 points, which doesn't sound like much now, but back in 2008, that was a massive score.
And in the finals, that's what I mean. Like, you know, that's
right.
Another thing we're talking about, to put those numbers up, you know, 36 points, because the game slows so much in the playoffs, and then even in the finals, you know, it's sort of, yeah, everything's very methodical, and yeah, to have a 36 point effort, you know, to sort of get LA back in that series is, yeah, that's just there. It's crazy to think of now.
And he took that team. This is post Shaq LA too. So, you know, a lot of people doubted the LA Lakers, you know, thinking it was just.
That's right.
Not the Shaq and Kobe show. Like, they always seen Kobe, but they didn't think, you know, Paul Gasol was going to be another Shaq. And then that's full credit to Paul Gasol as well. But yeah, Kobe
really.
They work well
together as a tandem.
I mean, as much as I love Shaq, I think that tandem worked better than Shaq and Kobe, personally. In Kobe's, like, the way Kobe played, I felt like it looked better. But, you know, that's, you know, Shaq. So it's hard to sort of discredit Shaq, but it just looked to me.
Everything goes through, but in those championships that those two won, that Shaq and Kobe won, everything goes through Shaq. Like, you know, Shaq was still at the peak of his powers. Maybe after that 0-4 series against the Pistons, then, you know, he was probably on the decline a little bit, and then he goes to Miami and wins a championship with Dwayne Wade, you know, in 2005. But, you know, that's sort of the tail end of Shaq's career, and that was one of the reasons why they wanted to move on from Shaq and keep Kobe was purely the age factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kobe was a lot younger. Yeah, he probably got 6 years on him. So, you know, that they've just gone, right, you know, this is not the way to keep going. You know, Shaq is not going to be able to, he hasn't got too many years left in him. So, you know, Kobe looks like he's still got plenty left in him. So this is the direction that they're going to go.
And that was the other thing, I guess, with Kobe in terms of his direction, so to speak, is he never, you know, a lot of players retired, and this is not, again, disputing players that retire and they can do what they want. But a lot of them tend to go into the analyst side and the media side and all that, I guess, probably because it's easy in a way, I suppose. But Kobe does his own thing. You know, Kobe, you know, like I said, the Academy Award that he got with that short film, he could have easily probably been set up and ESPN or someone would have paid him millions, but he wanted to.
Of course they would have.
He wanted to build his legacy on something else, whether it be like looking at what he invested in a super drink that now Coca-Cola have a minority stake in. So it's valued at $200 million. He started investing with his partner in, you know, media, data, gaming, things like that. He wasn't just sort of a content on just becoming an analyst or anything like that, which he could have easily becoming an analyst and sort of, you know, that's it and sort of see you later. He beats to his own drum in a way.
No, that's right. But you think about those detail things that they had on ESPN as well, you know, that they put out there, those, you know, where he would sort of delve into, you know, into people's games and stuff like that they had on ESPN Plus and all that sort of stuff. That were really, really popular.
Yeah.
Last year. So obviously they did the same sort of thing with Peyton Manning, you know, him diving into certain games and different things regarding to football. But they started all that stuff off with Kobe Bryant and you know and the detail series, which I thought were really cool. So yeah, that was his sort of kept that association still with basketball and having that you know, in-depth look, you know, putting his basketball smarts out there.
The NBA community's obviously got behind Kobe. A few of the games in the last couple of days, because of Kobe's number 24, the Spurs game and the Toronto game, I believe.
Toronto did the New Orleans game. As well, on the same day, they did the same thing. They sort of, after the opening tip, had a 24-second violation.
For both teams.
In honor, right. Yeah, that's right, both teams, yeah, sort of did that. It's just come out sort of earlier this afternoon that the NBL here in Australia are going to have, at the start of their games for this round, they're going to have 24 seconds of applause before each game. Which I was hoping they were going to do something like that. I was hoping that they were just going to continue on with the, you know, do the 24-second violation, or like some teams have done, an 8-second backcourt violation. Yeah. Some of the teams have done that as well. The UConn Huskies and the American women's team played a game today. They did that. Also, the Minnesota Timberwolves, they won the tip, and Andrew Wiggins went and put the ball down on the free throw line and left it there at the free throw line where where Kobe Bryant went past Michael Jordan on the all-time scorers list in Minnesota. So he put the ball on that free throw line if you're looking at the court via the TV on the left-hand side. Or the left-hand end of the Timberwolves court, so he left it there, and took the 8-second violation. I thought that was really cool.
Mark Cuban has now he's a Dallas Mavericks owner, which this is a big one, I think, has come out and retired for Dallas Mavericks that Kobe never played for, but no one will now, he's retired the number 24. No one else will wear the number 24 jersey for. The Dallas Mavericks, and we were saying before at the start, I think I don't know if it'll catch on, but it'd be great if it catches on, at least the teams want to retire the 24 jersey. We were also talking about even the All-Star game. Obviously, he's going to be It's
going to be a massive tribute.
The game's in Chicago,
there.
But there's going to be a massive tribute there. We were saying even possibly, you know, as cool as Miles was saying sort of at the start, before this, the new All-Star jerseys look, and they do look very nice now that
I'm
looking
awesome.
At them.
They're one of the better All-Star jerseys I've seen
in the
last
3 years.
I didn't
like last year's.
All been boring.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all been boring. It's just, and these ones this year, they brought out with the red and the blue. You know, with the 6-point star that they have on the on the Illinois state flag and everything like that, which sort of synonymous with Chicago. That these look terrific. Is there a chance that they could totally change that, and one team could be all yellow, or you know, all gold, and the other team could be all purple?
I mean, it'd be great. It's hard. I don't know the whole. It's hard for us to sort of judge. We don't know the whole logistics and. You know, like, to me, if anything, it'd be up to, I think it'd have to be up to Michael Jordan, because I'm assuming, I mean, obviously the NBA as well, because they'd have to approve it, but I'm assuming because it's Jordan Brandon now, the NBA All-Star Games, I'm assuming, yeah, he'd have to obviously rechange everything, so to speak, if that makes sense. But
could be a bit of a, yeah, but Leo, logistically, like they would have done an absolute buttload of these jerseys to sort of go out and sell as well.
That's right. It's possibly too hard. But
I don't think they would really care, you know, monetarily, you know, with whether it's the money side or whatever, or whether they've already just started to distribute these All-Star jerseys to outlets for them to sell. You know, whether they can sort of order a recall and get everybody to sort of to not sell them, and if they've got time to sort of go out and make new jerseys if they wanted to go in that direction.
Just finishing up on Kobe for me, I guess the other thing that I liked into his game, and this is even post game, is that it. From what I've read and everything about him, he was extremely accessible to players. And as young as Trae Young, like Trae Young's had a come out and had a tribute about Kobe, because he always was that, you know, Kobe, he said, like, he could always call Kobe and ask him about his game. And he seemed, I don't know personally, like, how accessible other players are, but he seemed to be accessible to everybody. You know, we're talking even like the Kevin Durant days and the Russell Westbrook. I know got a massive amount of advice. I think they did off-season training together. So he seemed to be completely accessible to anyone. It's not like he was hiding what he did. He just loved the game of basketball. That's pretty much
right.
It.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. And the other one that I think of as well was the game against CP3 playing for OKC.
Yeah,
he sat out yesterday's game against Dallas. I think he had a really good relationship with Kobe. You know, from CP3's LA days when he was playing for the Clippers. I think they had a really good rapport with each other. He just said I'm sitting out today's game against the Dallas Mavericks. So,
he was revered by players. Don't get me wrong, but he was also respected by players and fans.
That's right,
even in Philly, like he his father was from. He was born in Philly. His father was played for Philadelphia 76ers, Joe Jellybean Bryant. But how much respect they had when he came. I think I can't remember what final was, but he came into 76ers and he had an interview and he said, "I'm basically going to go in there and rip the heart out of Philadelphia and eat it," so to speak. And obviously they booed him, obviously mercilessly. But then he came back in the All-Star game. I think the All-Star game was next year and they cheered him. Like,
they loved him.
It's,
yeah,
you know, he's revered by players, but he just had that respect was just, yeah. Unbelievable. And it's just like, you know, like the same respect that Michael Jordan has, the same respect of there's certain players that have that respect and he's one of the course. Very, very few.
Well,
very,
right.
very few.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's up there. He's a top, you know, top three, top five, great of all time of the league. I don't think there's sort of any disputing that. Yeah, like you said, you know, so we sort of wrap up a little bit of, you know, well, our Kobe sort of taught the thing that sort of, yeah, just as a last point from me, the thing that's kind of sad is this year he's actually eligible to go into the Hall of Fame, and he's not going to be able to enjoy that process of, you know, of being inducted there, which is super sad. And also, again, just sort of watching, you know, watching the jump there this afternoon, and Tracy McGrady was just, he is shook to the core about what this, you know, he's probably been one of the most emotional interviews that I've seen, you know, in this last 36 hours, talking about Kobe. And he just, yeah, he said that he used to go to his house, and he's, his, yeah, the, he
thought
vividly,
of play with Gianna.
No,
he thought
that's
of
right,
play
yeah.
with Gianna. So, like, yeah. he would talk to Vanessa and the kids all the time about anything, really. So,
vividly remembers a conversation not that long ago that he was talking to Kobe about, that, you know, it must have just been in passing, and he's just like, you know, they must have just been talking about life in general. And Kobe actually said to him that he wanted to die young. When I heard that, I'm just like, oh my God.
But when Tracy said that, I heard that too, but I delved a bit more into it. Yes, he said, yeah, Kobe did say that, but Kobe, you know, Kobe also said that when they were both young as well. I would assume, don't know, but I would definitely assume that once he's had kids, his whole mindset's probably changed. But
no, of course.
Once I heard that, I went, oh, my, yeah, I was like, holy hell, like, you know.
That's, oh, it's just like, wow, like, that's.
Even Jason Terry, that was the other one that sort of shook me, because it's not like, I don't know, he seems so, he said, like, he said that they shouldn't be playing games today, and he goes, I know I'll probably get fired for this, but I don't think they should be playing games to this in honor of Kobe.
Few people have come out and said that.
But he was, to me, the first one, as what I've seen, he was the first one that's come out publicly on a national broadcast to say it. So, but, you know, again, that's a whole logistics thing. I don't think they should have never
said that. Well, they have canned, and it's not appropriate, but, you know, it's sort of, you know, the next game that the Lakers are playing was against the Clippers, and that was meant to be tomorrow, our time, but they've canned that game, and the next time that the Lakers play will be in Staples, and it'll be against Portland. So they've sort of given them an extra couple of days for the team to, they'll reschedule the Clippers game at another time. But yeah, the next time that they play now will be against the Clippers. I think it'll be Friday night American, so it'll be like Saturday morning for us.
Yeah, look, we'll move on to sort of, there's two couple of more things, like, sorry, we, you know, it's hard not to, but we had to sort of talk about Kobe because of his legacy and just everything about Kobe. The other sort of, I guess, talking about legacies, someone's just starting their legacy, and that's, well, I'll say your boy because he's from your team, Zion Williamson, finally debuted within
future.
The last week. Yeah, well, if we just go straight off that first game against the Spurs, they went down 121-117, but man, the future, that guy is, when I watched the entire game, especially that fourth quarter, like everybody,
Oh my God.
17 straight points in what, 4 minutes? Maybe 4.5 minutes?
I think it was like 4 minutes and 40 something seconds. It was just out of this world, like, and the thing that I sort of found funny about that too is he was 4 from 4 from 3. So right now he has got double the amount of threes that Ben Simmons has in his whole career.
Which is it's a very flat shot, isn't it?
There's not much arc to it. But all four of them, everybody's laid off him. Like he hit threes in college.
Yeah.
Like, and they just, it's, I mean, it's, that's just making people respect it.
Yeah.
But it was just, oh, it was just absolutely insane. And there was people out there, you know, certain media type people, that were out there after the first three quarters, you know, so, sort of saying, oh, well, this is a, you know, this is a pretty, you know, pretty down sort of event. Yeah, the way that Zion had, yeah, he had 5 points in the first three quarters. And yeah, there's certain people that that had come out before the, before the game had ended or anything like that. So that using the nasty B word, calling him a bust. And then then he just absolutely erupts in the fourth quarter, and single handedly brings New Orleans back into the game because they were getting handed to
them. They were down. I think they were down 12 points if I remember in that fourth quarter, and he. Yeah, you're right. They stayed off him.
He brought him back, and they were up one.
And he
bought himself. He played 18 minutes. Yeah. He bought himself an extra 2 minutes.
It was funny watching the players go back to the bench and then back to halfway and back to the bench. Like, full credit to Evan Gentry. I think he bought him an extra two minutes.
The medical staff wanted him out.
Yeah.
And Zion is like, look, I can win this game for us. I can win this game for us. Keep me in. And he's saying to Alvin, and he basically brought him 2 more minutes.
Yeah. And they had a nice talk during the game or after that game when he came off. But in that instance, Alvin could have succumbed to the crowd, too. The crowd was electric, obviously. But
oh, my God. All you could hear was the "we want Zion" chants. And even in the next game against Denver, same thing happened.
Yeah, that was, that game, same thing. Like, he only had 21 minutes, but he scored 15 points. And this ridiculously massive block that went
awesome. I think it was Gary Harris, and he just absolutely obliterated the ball into the crowd. And you watch the replay of it so many times, it's like, oh, man, that is so close to being goaltending.
Actually, that's true. I never looked at it like that. Yeah.
Right at the peak before the ball started to come down, and he just absolutely annihilates it into the crowd. And he just like, so glad they didn't pull that back.
Yeah, I'd actually never thought about that because, it was so close to sort of coming down.
The ball just hung in the air for so long, and he just comes through and just destroys it.
But then on that third game, they actually beat a perennial sort of front runner in the Boston Celtics.
They gave it to Boston.
Yeah,
they look very out of sorts, Boston, in that game.
And that wasn't just Zion. Like, Zion probably his most minutes, 27 minutes, and 21 points. Got his first double-double, 11 rebounds. But, they really did. Kemba Walker sort of stood up, except for the free throw. The three-point, he was terrible in 3 points. But
I think he went 3 for 13
They really took the Celtics to the hammer. And that wasn't just Zion. That was Drew Holiday's, one of his better games of the year. Because he... Injury aside, because that hasn't helped, but I think that was one of his better games of the year. Plus, Brandon
played well since coming back from injury, Drew Holiday.
Yeah, but they really took it to Boston Celtics. It's like they muscled up in a way. Zion's massive as it is, but it's like they muscled up in a way.
The two previous games, all the hype around Zion, and they've lucky that stretch of games that they've had three games at home, the Pels. So. They'll obviously be on the road. They're on the road now. It was just lucky. It'll be interesting to see how they manage his minutes on the road. Obviously, he's not going to be playing back-to-backs. It is tough on the coach because they've actually been playing a lot better as of late, and now he's got to sort of completely change game plans, I guess, with Zion coming in. It sort of sucks for JJ Redick because he's had to go back to the bench now. He'll still be getting starters minutes.
Still made 17 points in that game for 20.
No, that's right, and that's what I mean. Minutes. It's
I like that starting five. I mean, I don't know about you because I know it's your team and everything, but if they don't trade for people, I like the starting five of Brendan Ingram, Zion Williamson, Derek Favors, Lonzo Bourne, Drew Holiday. I think that proves it. That was the first time they've done it, and it works. I think that's a good mix there, personally.
There was a few times there throughout those two losses where Gentry is playing four guards and Zion, and that's just not No. That's not the formula. You know, obviously with Josh Hart and JJ Redick, and then Alonzo Ball and Drew Holiday and Zion Williamson sort of playing the five. That's not the go. They're like the run and gun type of offense and everything, but that's that doesn't look like the right makeup of a team. You can only play that sort of lineup for very short spurts.
I like the way, like, on that game, Lonzo Ball got 15 assists. He seems to he works very well with Zion.
That's they're going to do it now. I think he will have to be the primary ball distributor, and Drew will be playing off the ball a lot. Which is fine, yeah. Lonzo is a very good ball distributor, and hopefully he's not going to be asked to handle the offensive load as much now. Hopefully he can be that, you know, he can sort of focus a little bit more defensively, be a 3-and-D type player, be able to hit that open three, which he's shooting a lot better now, and just be that ball distributor, drive and kick. You know, because he's still very quick. Like Lonzo's deceptively quick for a tall,
very deceptively quick,
a big guard. Yeah, he's unbelievable. When he explodes, you're just like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah, he's a 6'6", so he's not a small guard, really, by any sort of a stretch of the imagination. But yeah,
he's got explosiveness.
I don't know if. I think it's possibly too far gone. I don't know. As in, like, I'm talking about the sort of, I don't know if they can make the eight this year. I don't think it
matters. Like, I'm sure that the motivation will be there. I think they're five games out of the eight spot. They could even be more than that because they lost to San Antonio, which would have put them a full game behind after that loss. Not to say that it's impossible. They've shown how that they can play. It'll depend on who they've got to play in these, you know, after the All-Star break. I'm sure that'll be the focus after the All-Star break, which is coming up fairly soon in the next couple of weeks. I think they'll try and get to the All-Star break and then sort of assess the season from there. I'd love them to sort of, you know, make it a charge at the playoffs. But this is a development season. I think this will be the proving ground on who they want to keep for next year, and then sort of, you know, make this, you know, a development year, and then really make a charge, because obviously they started off extremely poorly this year, which, you know, has basically shot the season. If they hadn't had such a shocking start to the year, then, you know, they could have been right in the mix by the time Zion comes back. So, you know, it is what it is with the Pels. I'd hope that they don't focus too much on trying to make the playoffs. Zion will be, you know, if he plays 30 games, that's what he'll get. Thereabouts, you know, may get 35 games. It just depends on how many back-to-backs they've got coming through the season.
Well, I think his first away game will be against the Cleveland Cavaliers, I believe. So, it is. It's his first away games, which I think he'll play in, will be against Cleveland. So, do you, just before we move on, no chance you see him at All-Star Weekend? Sorry, I'll say that again. You'll probably see him at All-Star Weekend, but
he'll be there.
No chance he's actively participating in All-Star Weekend.
Don't think he'll be a participant in that rookie world game, whatever the hell they call it now.
USA versus all world.
Whatever the hell they do now.
It's still his rookie sophomore at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's just that it's
he'll be there, but I don't think he'll be a participant. I think next year they'll probably target him for that, and obviously they'll be pushing hard for him to be in the slam dunk comp as well.
Yeah, I think just looking at the way he shed a few kilos by the looks of it, but he's explosive. It's absolutely ridiculous how explosive he is.
Oh, the way that he sort of glides towards the rim as well. There was we were just watching that that Denver game that was on SBS on the Saturday, I think it was, and there's just some of the moves that he just glides toward the rim as well. You know, not also the explosiveness, but you know, some of the stuff is so smooth, and you're just like, oh, all right, you know, the expectations are going to be so unbelievably high for him, and I just, you know, I don't. I can just see.
You're a person that finds it hard to give someone praise because you don't want to. You find it hard to give someone praise because you don't want to overhype something because you want it to work out, so to speak. You're more of a realist, which is fine. You're more of a realist, which I completely get.
I want to be a realist, but like I said, you know, that's my team as well. So I can't really give objective, unbiased opinions on it. I'd like to think that I can try, but I simply just can't.
The other thing we'll touch on before we finish up is Damian Lillard's 61 points against the Warriors, which I'm not discrediting the Warriors. They've been competitive this year.
They're competitive. Like against the big teams, a lot of the times they'll get bushed. Yeah. But this was a game that it was on TNT. And this is a game that they were down from the jump.
Yeah.
And Golden State, Golden State came out and started giving it to him, and he just led the fight back. The thing that I thought that was a little funny about that game too, you know, obviously, you know, Lillard hit a career high for him, 61 points, hit 11 triples. But was the status of Draymond Green.
High too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And yeah. I just thought that the status of Draymond Green, he had did not play, you know, a DNP coach's decision, which was a little funky. I thought that was very, very strange.
I haven't worked out Draymond this year. Damian Lillard 61 points. That wasn't overtime, yes, against the Warriors, but he had to do it without CJ McCollum. I think he was out, and Rodney Hood. There was a lot of players out.
Their injury list is massive. Rodney Hood gone.
Zach Collins gone.
Yusuf Nurkic is still out.
Yeah, they're very.
Scala Bissiere is out. Yeah. Now CJ McCollum's out. It's like, holy moly.
They are like the Warriors at the moment.
these players out. They're just decimated. You know, they're lucky that they've got Damian Lillard there and somebody, you know, like Carmelo Anthony that can sort of take a little bit of the offensive load. And, you know, Melo's playing, you know, pretty well. I think he's averaging like 17 points a game. So, you know, they're lucky that they've got the luxury of that. And if, you know, he hasn't really had some of those games where he's been very inefficient, you know, Melo has been pretty good.
Yeah, with Draymond, I don't. I mean, of all the stuff here, you know, he's been very close to Kobe and all that. That's fine. So I don't know if I don't see him. Like, you've got your two biggest players out in Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. I just don't see him. He doesn't feel like a leader to me. I don't know what you think. He's just.
As a singular sort of person like that, and I guess, you know, the team is under a lot of duress at the moment. Like you said, you know, with they're extremely injury depleted as well. You know, a talentless team. Not to say that an NBA talentless team. They're not talented people. They're in the NBA, so they're pretty damn good players. But you know, on a team that it's been very poor this year, by the lofty standards of the Warriors of the last 5 years or so, and I think I mentioned it last week that Chuck has just him, Charles Barkley sort of come out and just been relentless to him I don't see too much trash talking when the guy's averaging a triple single.
Oh, I love it. And then they don't like each other at all, do they?
No, they don't.
He's averaging a triple single. And then he come back and said, "You make everything sound like a Wendy's sandwich." Or maybe he's speaking in terms of my rings. Like, they just hilarious. Like, they're both jibber jabbing at each other. But, you know, what? And for the record, just obviously, ESPN, or Inside the NBA, I should say, aside, I know I've heard Miles say this plenty of times, triple single. So I'm not giving any credit to Charles Barkley.
No, hell no. That's
Miles has been saying this for like months and like probably even years. I don't know. You have said triple single before. But he's right. I mean, yes, you've lost Steph Curry. Yes, you've lost Klay Thompson. Yes, you technically have lost Kevin Durant and Andre Iguodala. But wouldn't that, to me, as a player of his caliber, so to speak, turn you into a leader and then step up? Like, you can't be a leader and on the contract you're on and average 8.4 points per game and 6.3 rebounds because he's a power forward. So
no, an undersized power forward, but yeah, that's what I mean. Like he's your glue guy. He's obviously that third wheel.
He's a third championship team, and the past two
championships, it's a fourth wheel really when they had Kevin Durant there. So he's the glue guy. Like he's not that superstar that transcends time and space. That's just who Draymond is. He's that chippy player. That can sort of galvanize the team. But he's the dirty work sort of guy. Pretty much I'd say he's an extremely poor man's Dennis Rodman. Even though he probably averages a little bit more points than what Dennis does. But
he's a poor man's Dennis Rodman. Nah, sorry, that's I completely agree.
A very poverty stricken, poor African nation, Dennis Rodman. Because
if we're comparing between him and Dennis Rodman, that's a perfect example. So Dennis Rodman.
Oh, I think they're light years apart, but that's just the comparison.
Just how bad Draymond Green is at the moment. Dennis Rodman went to Chicago. So the three there now. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen,
Dennis Rodman, Luke Longley, Ron Harper.
What I'm saying is, you compare those three to the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. Yes, Michael Jordan and yes, Scottie Pippen, served their own right to Chicago. So did Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. But Dennis Rodman, he still forged that legacy they're there. I'm comparing them because if you look at those three against each other, I get that, but I'm saying I look at it three and it's completely light years apart just how much Draymond Green. It's not a non-factor.
In a different era as well. That's what I mean.
Whereas, if you look at how well Dennis Rodman played with Detroit, he doesn't need.
He had two rings and a former Defensive Player of the Year.
Correct. Draymond, I don't see Draymond like that. That's really what I'm sort of getting at. It's just he if he ever moves from that side, he would have to be with another star or another two stars. He can't be a franchise leader. It's impossible.
Neither could Dennis Rodman, the different things that both of those players do, are very much light years apart.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I'm not a big Draymond Green fan. I don't see what he I just don't see what he brings to the table, except for what you said, the glue that holds the team together. Yeah, that's probably about it.
But his numbers have definitely plummeted over the last 2 years now, where that teams are just leaving him open for that three now, where as beforehand when he was actually in good form, and close to even averaging a triple-double, he was obviously the assist guy in that team as well. But teams are just leaving him wide open for three.
To me, his contract
is just crazy.
He's just extremely lucky of how well, how well the Warriors played through those championship rings, because his contract is based on that. His contract's not based on his ability. That's how I see it.
No,
personally.
But it's how well he's worked with Steph Curry and Klay
Thompson.
That's right.
Well, and I agree with that. If they weren't there, he went to another team. He's not going to get the type of money that he's getting now. And I think he's getting,
he's got to cash in.
I think he signed a 3-year, $100 million contract or thereabouts anyway. So, he's not. Yeah, you're right. I just, for someone that, and he could statistically be better because, there's no one else there really shooting. He's not playing.
Right. It's D'Angelo Russell's team at the moment.
Well, that'll do it, I guess, for this NBA podcast. That's our 50th podcast for everybody that's kept with us for the whole time. And that's including all those sort of jubber guys out there that I know some of you, as we talked to over the weekend, pretend to listen, but you can keep listening. That'd be great for us.
We need actual listens, not bogus listens.
Not 10, yeah, well, not 10-minute listens and then sort of go, yeah, whatever. Because I'm sure you would love to listen to this because of what we just talked about today. Yeah, don't forget to follow us on all the socials out there, Facebook, SoundCloud and Twitter, which is at the Final Play Pod. That'll do it for me for this week. My name's Jason.
My name's Miles.
Have a good weekend, NBA week.
Have a good end. Hopefully, it's a little bit more happier NBA week for everybody. We'll be a lot more happy and jibber next week.
And look, most likely we will talk about, there's going to be a lot of, probably towards the end of the year, there's going to be a lot of Kobe talk towards the end of the year because Kobe is going to be remembered for the rest of this year. But that's just his legacy. That's just the way he is. That's just how good he is. So have a good week, everyone.
Right. See ya.
See ya. That's my favorite bit.